Welcome, everyone. Thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks, asking the question, why wait for heaven, on 1-2 Radio, changing the way we think about life and spirituality. Today is June 6th, 2014. Today on A Course in Miracles, I'm excited to welcome back author Susan Dugan. Susan is the author of two books based on A Course in Miracles, Extraordinary Ordinary Forgiveness and Forgiveness Offers Everything I Want. She's the co-founder of the School of Reason for A Course in Miracles, and she facilitates ACIM study groups in Denver, Colorado. Now, as you're listening to the show today, I invite you to join us in the 1-2 Radio chat room on Facebook. Now, one of the easiest ways to get there is to go to the 1-2radio.com website, and you'll notice that on the left side of the page, there's a column. Click the chat button. You'll be automatically redirected to our chat room on Facebook. Now, if you haven't been in the chat for a while, you'll notice that it does look a little bit different, but it's still us. I'll see you over there. Now, on today's show, Susan and I are going to use Workbook Lesson 182 as our jumping-off point for our discussion. So what I thought I'd do is read just a few paragraphs. This is actually a very long lesson, so I'm going to just read some excerpts from it, just to kind of give you a taste of what this lesson is about. Now, the lesson is, I will be still an instant and go home. This world you seem to live in is not home to you. And somewhere in your mind, you know this is true. A memory of home keeps haunting you as if there were a place that called you to return, although you do not recognize the voice, nor what it is the voice reminds you of. Yet still you feel an alien here, from somewhere all unknown. Nothing so definite that you could say with certainty you are in exile here, just a persistent feeling. Sometimes not more than a tiny throb, at other times hardly remembered, actively dismissed, but surely to return to mind again. We speak today for everyone who walks this world, for he is not at home. He goes uncertainly about the endless search, seeking in darkness what he cannot find, not recognizing what it is he seeks. A thousand homes he makes, yet none contents his restless mind. He does not understand he builds in vain. The home he seeks cannot be made by him. There is no substitute for heaven. All he ever made was hell. Perhaps you think it is your childhood home that you would find again. When you are still an instant, when the world recedes from you, when valueless ideas cease to have value in your restless mind, then will you hear his voice. Take time today to lay aside your shield, which profits nothing, and lay down the spear and the sword you raised against an enemy without existence. You have not lost your innocence. It is this you yearn for. This is your heart's desire. This is the voice you hear, and this the call which cannot be denied. Be still an instant and go home with him, and be at peace a while. Okay, well, those are just a few excerpts, probably, in fact, less than a quarter of the material that you're going to find in Lesson 182. But I wanted you to just have a kind of a glimpse of that, and we'll keep talking about it as the hour progresses. So, Susan, thank you so much for joining me today. Are you there?
Thank you, CA. It's lovely to be here.
And thank you so much for suggesting this lesson. And I cannot tell you how timely it is, because actually I was reading yesterday some portions of the text, which are chapter 27, and it was talking about innocence. And I'll tell you what, this has been a big theme for me this week. So it was just perfect timing that you would suggest this for today's show.
Well, good. I think the topic of innocence is always up for us.
Because, yes, it is.
Because we don't, that's what we don't really feel about ourselves. And this lesson is so evocative of all of the course's themes, but I think the reason that I tend to return to it again and again is that I think it really speaks to, you know, if we open to it and we are still an instant, and even in reading this lesson, and just, you know, take a little quiet time with it, it really is speaks to all of us in the sense that everyone here is fighting a hard battle. Everyone here is secretly, you know, has this frightened inner child that is walking this, you know, can relate to what this lesson is saying, is walking this earth feeling that they are an alien here, you know, kind of living this lie that everything is okay and that they can get what they need from this world that ultimately always will fail us, and you know, desperately trying to fill this inner lack that we feel over believing that we're separate from God and that we're not worthy anymore, we're not welcome home to the true reality of our seamless union with our Creator and each other. And so, you know, I think that it he beautifully, Jesus beautifully lays out in this lesson by sort of using, you know, speaking to us as that child, but also speaking as himself as a child, as the child that's going to lead us home, as the child that's calling to us, that, you know, our innocence, the symbol of our innocence that's being reborn when we are willing to join, you know, to admit that we're an alien here and that it's not working and that we're afraid and you know, that nothing, we come to that point of there has to be a better way. And when we're willing to, throughout our days, kind of come back to that instant in which we, you know, we admit that our way isn't working, and we answer that haunting call within of an innocence that we really all are searching for, then we can rejoin with him and his awareness that innocence is still there, that it's still intact, and that he can lead us back to that innocence as long as we're willing to change our mind about the fact that it, you know, that it, this innocence includes everyone. So as well, as long as we're willing to hold our brother, in quotes, harmless, whoever, you know, whatever seems to be the cause of our distress is not the real cause. The cause is this belief that we've thrown away God's love and we deserve punishment and we've thrown away our home. And so we have now this alternative inner child that is our salvation, that we can turn to within, our new teacher that is going to show us that everyone here is fighting the same hard battle, and everyone here, you know, deserves love and mm-hmm. deserves to go home.
Yeah, I think this lesson is really a standout in terms of the workbook. I mean, there's probably, of course, I think I love every lesson, but there's probably 12 to 15 that always stand out in my mind. I mean, I always go back to them time and time again, and this is one of them. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why this one feels a little bit different than some of them, but maybe it's because this lesson kind of pinpoints why so many people come to the Course in the first place. Yeah. Because it says, you're living in a world and this is not your home. And in the second paragraph of the lesson, it even says, you know, there's a lot of people, they're going to deny this is true. We play all the games to try to keep ourselves from remembering that we feel like there's something missing in our lives. There's a hole in our lives. And I can tell you, as a professional astrologer, I feel like I deal with this all the time, because on one level or another, we feel like something is missing. We feel like we're not getting our fair share. We feel like there's a wound. We feel like we're just trying to fill a hole. And so this speaks so much to it when he says, well, you know what? It's because this is not your home. And even though you try to build 1,000 different homes, you will never find it. And even if you, and I love the part about going back to the childhood home too, because I think how often do we hear somebody say, if only we could go back to the past. You know, if only we could go 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. Right. We always think that somehow it's now, or it's what's going on right now that's really bad. But if we could just return to that place, whether or not it's our childhood home, or whether it's just, if we could just return to the simple times, you know, to how it used to be. And we just kid ourselves, because that's exactly how we felt 10 years ago.
Right. Well, we romanticize the past. We romanticize. Mm-hmm. It's not really true. If we're honest with ourselves, you know, I mean, there's ups and downs in life, and we have moments of pleasure that seem, you know, that we want to cling to. But overall, you know, it's just that same attempt to say that, you know, to blame the problem on something external. And something mm-hmm. that something right now is happening in my life that is keeping me from peace, that is keeping me from feeling loved and loving. And that's a lie, you know? I mean, that's the whole ego thought system, is always trying to prove that we exist at God's expense, but it's not our fault. It's something out there. And that's the problem of our lack of peace. And you know, you were talking about how it, well, and it talks about in paragraph 2, how others will deny that they are sad and do not recognize their tears at all. And that's that whole, you know, attempt to believe that everything's okay, you know, and people that really overtly are constantly stating that it's a beautiful world and it's mm-hmm. and everything is just rosy and you know, it's and I mean that's really pretty active denial given the state of this world, you know, even if your personal life is going okay. So it's really that attempt again. That doesn't necessarily mean you can be putting on this face of happiness, and but you're still denying the fact that you know, you're unless you're feeling kindly toward everyone and everything all the time, then and have no judgments, then that's not really true. That's a lie. And you know, the Course is very confrontational in that sense, that it really wants to get us to look at the fact that our way isn't working, because we can't embrace a new way until we're willing to be really honest about the way we're feeling internally, you know, and about the way and about how much we want to make our lack of peace and our lack of our feeling of being unloved or unloving about some external factor, someone else's problem. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, and the thing I love is this is one of those lessons that when Ken talks about it, he refers to the bliss ninnies.
Right.
And I love that term. I mean,
right.
It's just so, it's so cute. I mean, it's in some ways. And yet, I mean, on one hand, I get it. Psychological denial is really useful, because right. we would hardly be able to stand that feeling of emptiness that we have in our lives if we didn't keep trying to fill it. But, like, you know, as Ken would say in this particular lesson, the goal of the Course is just to help you realize that you're in the dream and to awaken. It's not to make you miserable. The point isn't to point out to you, yeah, see how really miserable you are? This life sucks. It's to let you know, yeah, there's a lot of suffering here. There's a lot of stuff we don't like. But guess what? It's a dream, and you can wake up. There is a different way to do it. And that is what a lot of the workbook lessons do, is they just keep driving home that point. But as long as we want to be a bliss ninny, as long as we want to just go, oh, everything is perfectly okay, and the world is evolving and everything's getting better, right. then we're really not addressing the real symptoms. Or we're addressing symptoms, but we're not addressing the problem.
Right, and the only problem is in the mind, and it isn't that we can't feel peace here. That's quite the opposite. The Course is teaching us how we can, you know, live in this world in a peaceful state, an unwaveringly peaceful state, an unwaveringly kind state. But to get to that point, this is a process, and to get to that point first requires us to be very honest about how this is not a peaceful place, you know? Mm-hmm. It's a projection of a very unkind thought in the mind. And that was the idea that we could exist separately from God and would have anything to gain by that. And mm-hmm. that, you know, and that's where all of our secret guilt is coming from. And that's why we're in such conflict here. And so until we are willing to go back to, you know, to look at the problem as it is and not the way we set it up, as the Course says, and Ken often quotes that line, then we have to, you know, we're never going to, I mean, it's just going to be this circular trading of guilt that goes on here, this game of guilt that we play, in which we're always trying to, you know, whoever gets to be the biggest victim wins. mm-hmm. And, you know, that's crazy. And we have to start looking at the fact that that's crazy, and not looking at it in other people, looking at it in ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, this is hurting me, and I don't want it. There is another way, and the Course is all about getting us back to the decision-making mind. It's really not, you know, it spends so much time talking about the ego, because that's what we first have to allow to ourselves to undo, our projections of this whole thought system of the ego, which is based on the idea that we of separation realized, and that, you know, we really are guilty of this and must hide from God. And we have mm-hmm. to first uncover that that's a lie, but we uncover it by, you know, from moment to moment, looking at how reactive we are. And mm-hmm. you can't skip that process.
No, you can't.
Yeah. I mean, it's and it is a process. And this lesson really speaks to also the idea that it's a process and that it can be a very gentle process, again, if we embrace this new child within, if we embrace this new inner teacher. I mean, he's speaking very symbolically, very metaphorically in this lesson, to try to meet us in the, you know, telling us an alternative fairy tale, really, in mm-hmm. which, in yes. which, you know, you're this frightened little child, and you think that you're this frightened little child in this world, lost and alone, and you can never find your way back, but there's another child in you, and that is your innocence, that's me. I mean, he's not saying that yet, but that's what he's you know, pointing to. And if you will follow me, if you will listen to this call for, you know, this love calling to you from outside the dream, and follow and begin to follow me, this is your innocence. It hasn't been, you know, your innocence is intact. You know, I'm holding this innocence for you, and I have infinite patience, and all you need to do is begin to follow me instead of following, you know, rooting yourself more deeply in the dream, following a dream that just is going to keep you searching and feeling more and more alien and more lost. So we need to turn around. We need to go back to the mind. And I will gently, you know, gently lead you there. Come take my hand. This is the real child within you, you know. And so it's that contrast between the, you know, this is the way, the frightened child of the ego, and this is the innocent child reborn of, you know, of the true Son of God that you can join with. And you know, that process of learning to redirect back to me, redirect back to the mind, take your all of your conflicted illusions and all of the, you know, all of the things that you blame and the people that you blame for how you're feeling, you know, take look at that with me and take that back to the mind. Let's look on this and see that, you know, we'll see that we're all innocent. Everybody mm-hmm. here has that same frightened child, is just like you, and everybody has the same solution. My arms are open to everybody. This cradle is open, you know. And so I think that's the you know, he's laying out all of those themes here, but he so deeply speaks, if we open to this and are really reflective about it, to everything we want, to everything we think is missing. And you know, the quality of this lesson, the tenor of this lesson is, it really speaks to your heart, I think, if you open to it. It, you know, you can relate to the child he's talking about, because it's really within us all, the frightened child here that thinks it's here, and you are longing, you know, you are longing for the innocence that he's talking about. And so, you know, it's such a hopeful lesson in that sense.
It is, and it's a very, very gentle lesson.
Yes.
And I agree with you. You know, just even the words, like, it just sounds so comforting to me. Be still an instant and go home.
Right.
You know, and to me, that just speaks volumes. Be still an instant, because that's another thing. How often do we, in our lives, we just feel like we're overwhelmed. It's just a cacophony yeah. of noise and issues and overwhelm, and this needs to be done, and this to-do list has 20 things on it. And all of a sudden, this lesson comes up and says, be still an instant and go home. And, you know, one other thing I draw upon a lot, so I know many people that listen to me, they've heard me say this before, but, you know, there are just those things in life that stick with you. And one of them is, years ago, I don't even know, was it in the 80s or 90s, the group that was Tears for Fears, is that what it was called?
I don't know.
And they had that song, it was probably like 8 minutes long, called Shout. They did a whole album that I would refer to as teenage or 20-something angst. I mean, mm-hmm. every song was about angst. But what I'll never forget is I was listening to an interview of them talking about that particular album. And they also, I think, had their second album was called In fact, or maybe it was the first one. It was called Songs from the Big Chair. Something like that. Mm-hmm. And so when somebody said, what the heck are you talking about? You know, Songs from the Big Chair. He referred to the movie and the story of Sybil. And mm-hmm. in the particular movie, Sybil, I think it was played by Sally Field and Joanne Woodward, I think, was the psychologist, psychiatrist that was treating her. But he referred to the idea that Joanne Woodward kind of called Sally Field, Sybil, and said, you know, come over here and sit with me in the big chair. And just kind of cradled her and held her and held the space for her. But that's it. Just total acceptance, totally treating her as the innocent and just loving her. And so he said the whole idea of what that made him feel, the comfort of somebody just calling you up to the big chair and just sitting there with you, this authority figure who's just going to love you and make you feel like it's going to be okay, no matter what the demons are, no matter what's going on in your life, they're going to call you to the big chair. So that's why they named the album that. And that image always, always comes back to me. And when I hear this particular lesson, be still an instant and go home with him. Be at peace for a while. It's like somebody's calling us to the big chair and saying, you know, Just be still an instant and see what happens. You know, let the cacophony of everything going on in your life, just let it go for a few minutes. And you don't have to be a great meditator, or you don't have to be really good at stilling the mind. You know, all those things that we try so hard to do. This is just, don't even try. Just be still an instant and come sit in the big chair and just know that you are the innocent child. That's how you are seen and have always been seen by the Creator and by your Father.
Right, right. Well, it's just, yes, come back to the mind with me and look at this with me. You know, sit here from above the battleground with me. And it does just take an instant. And it's really, I mean, the whole idea of be still an instant and go home is the practice of forgiveness. It's what we practice throughout our day. It just takes an instant. It takes that instant in which I you know, catch myself reacting to something as the cause of a change, of a shift to upset in my mind, and you know, an experience of losing my peace over something, and then I stop. I mean, it's really like be still an instant and forgive with me, you know? Because you know, that's what we do. And so it just takes that moment of saying, you know what? It's not for the reason I think. It's lesson five. I'm not upset for the reason I think. I feel like the cause of it is what just happened, you know, what you just said to me, what the betrayal, the email, the, you know, I mean, whatever, the illness, whatever it is. But it's not. That's not the cause. And, you know, let me go back to the mind with you. Let me be still an instant. I could see peace with you. I want to see peace with you. And, you know, this practice over time, this process is just those instants. It's just making that the purpose of our day, the overriding purpose of our day as we go through doing the whatever normal things we, you know, the working and the interacting with people and all of the things that, all those busy thing doings that you were referring to. You know, in our culture, that a lot of that comes with the territory, but we can still be at peace. We can still learn to realign to peace and catch ourselves. You know, the process of this is catching ourselves believing that the cause of that someone else took my peace away from me, mm-hmm. and giving that power to something outside ourselves. And so, you know, we have this loving presence in our mind, this ego-free presence in our mind that's always available, this inner teacher that's always available to redirect back to. And you know, that process over time, I mean, that practice even in the instant, the result of it is we recognize that you're not the problem. But the problem was I became afraid of love again. And the answer is to go back to love. And so, you know, once I have gone back to that, aligned back with that teacher, and it may not be the result of it, the return to peace may not be so instant, but the practice is instant. And, you know, I will feel peace eventually once my fear subsides. And yes. So, you know.
And we need to take a break because we're already 25 minutes after the hour. But what I want to do in the second part, I really want to drive home that point of what is our purpose, and specifically go to one of the paragraphs towards the end of this lesson, which is take time today to lay aside your shield. And so we're going to talk about that during the second half of the show today. So everybody sit tight. Thank you so much for being here with us today. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks on 1-2 Radio, changing the way we think about life and spirituality. Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks on 1-2 Radio, changing the way we think about life and spirituality. And my guest today is author Susan Dugan. And we are talking about workbook lesson 182, which is Be Still an Instant and Go Home. Now, this is it's not a disclaimer, but it's a warning. I might get really provocative in this half of the show. So I'm not going to say prepared to be offended, because that's not what I want to say. But I just want to say, I just want to kind of come out with some things that I've really been thinking recently. And, you know, that's just kind of the way I talk. So that's what I'm going to do. And what I'm going to refer to specifically, the idea, like over the last 24, 48 hours, an idea of innocence has really, really been hitting me. And in this particular lesson, towards the end of it, there's a paragraph that says this: take time today to lay aside your shield, which profits nothing, and lay down the spear and sword you raised against an enemy without existence. And these are some of the things that I've been thinking. And I'm going to kind of lead up to this in some weird ways, but hopefully I'll tie it all together. You know, if I think about what I carry around in my purse, I have money, I have hand lotion, I have chapstick, and I have a phone. And even on my phone, I have a number of apps. And the kind of apps I have, I certainly have one for 1-2 Radio. I have an app that I can read the entire Course in Miracles. I have an astrology app, and I have a tarot app, you know, and I have a GPS app, etc. But I'm saying this because why do we carry these things around with us? Because we expect to use them. I don't carry things around that I don't think I'm ever going to use, right? I don't put a fork in my purse, you know? I don't put sort of odds and ends or a screw or a hammer. I'm carrying things around in my purse because I'm expecting to use them. I'm expecting that I'm going to want a little mad money, or that I'm going to want my chapstick at some point, or my hand lotion. And those apps on the phone, I think I'm going to use them for something. That's why I'm carrying them around. So where I'm going here, and I think you probably already get it, are we carrying around the spear and the sword? You know, what else are we carrying around with us that we somehow think we're going to need? We're going to need it to protect ourselves. And when we carry those things around psychologically, it just tells me we think we're going to need them. But even more than that, this is kind of where I'm going to. I've noticed as I was reading in the text yesterday in chapter 27 and some other things that keep coming up, this idea of innocence kept coming. And also, I've admitted this before. I watch way too much political news. And a lot of times I just have to turn it off because it's just so depressing. But one thing I've really noticed, and I don't want this to get into a political discussion of right or wrong, but I'm just going to use this as an example. For the most part, and I think this happens both Republican and Democratic, but what I've noticed is there's a number of, I would say, fairly, conservative people. And their mission, their purpose, what they want is to impeach the president and or to make the president wrong. And so what I would say is, what are they carrying around with them all the time? Their purpose is, let's make the president wrong. So it doesn't really matter what he does. It doesn't matter at all, because every single thing is going to be evidence that he is in the wrong. And I really started thinking about this, and I started thinking about it personally, because if we're carrying around this idea, and I know I do it too, so if I'm mad at somebody or I'm angry at somebody and I'm carrying some kind of resentment, I'm not holding them as innocent. I'm holding them as guilty. And it doesn't really matter what they do, because I'm going to find them guilty. I am ready to find them guilty. I'm carrying my spear. I'm carrying my sword. And in my case, probably my sword is my mind. You know, I'm ready to just lash out and say, see, this proves it. This is why this person is so bad or this person is so wrong. And so as I was reading the text and as I was rereading this lesson, that whole idea of innocence came to me. And I thought, why is our purpose, and I think it should be, why is our purpose not to find innocence? Why is our purpose not to just say, you know, I'm going to hold everybody innocent, and I'm going to spend my day looking for proof that that's what they are, instead of looking for proof that they're guilty. Now, in some ways, I know the answer to my own question. I mean, this is what we do, and this is what the Course is trying to get us to understand or to think about. But I also, and this is going to be provocative too, I was kind of thinking, if you even take it on to another level, I used to practice Christianity. I would even have considered myself a born-again Christian. But the one thing I never quite understood is why people like to wear crosses. Now, I do know that sometimes it's because there's a lot of sentimental value. But when I was a Christian, I kept thinking, why would I want to wear this thing around my neck that was a sign of torture and death? It always struck me as kind of odd. Like, why is our symbol not lilies? Why is our symbol not something that's associated with Easter? But I would say that to you too. And this isn't about the form. This isn't about saying don't be wearing crosses. I'm just saying, what if we always saw it as holding lilies? And in fact, in the textbook, there's several places where we talk about that, or where the Course talks about it, that we offer lilies of peace. We offer lilies of forgiveness to every person that we meet. And I just want to offer that and have Susan kind of chime in here. But you know, it's really been provocative for me over the last couple of days, and just made me realize that how often am I carrying the spear? Because I'm ready to make you guilty. I am so ready to jump on you when you make a mistake, instead of seeing myself as carrying lilies and seeing myself as going, I'm looking for your innocence. And I just want to keep challenging myself on that level, because reading this lesson, that's it. It just made me feel like a little child. And I thought, why can I not just say, I'm going to look for your innocence? That's going to be my purpose today, is to hold myself innocent and to hold you innocent as well. So Susan, I'm now going to let you talk.
Well, there's a few themes there. let's just talk about the idea of innocence and the sword and the spear that's referred to in the last paragraph of this lesson. But, you know, I think that it isn't our first impulse at all to see people as innocent. Again, that, you know, this is all unconscious, and our secret agenda when we're aligned with the ego as our teacher is always to have this sort of unspoken setup in which we, you know, we have our little our sword and our spear at the ready, and we're just waiting for anyone to do something, you know, to treat us unfairly. And that would include to disagree with us, to, you know, in the case that you were using about political stuff, anybody who doesn't agree with me is treating me unfairly. They're an idiot. They're attacking me. Mm-hmm. They're attacking my values. In the case of a personal relationship, you know, I'm not getting my way. They're not meeting my needs. They're interfering with what I need to get done, what I need to feel peaceful. And so we have all of this. This is all a setup, and it's unconscious, in which, again, our goal when we're aligned with the ego is to prove that we're victims of the world we see, and that, you know, we want that makes us feel innocent, because the other person is relatively more guilty than we are.
Right.
And so it temporarily relieves that nagging sense of guilt, again, that everybody is walking around with here. So we have we have our sword at the ready, and we now feel justified in retaliating, in attacking, and in all the cruel things that we do to each other. And then, of course, it doesn't last, because we, you know, as soon as we've attacked and retaliated, that guilt is going to start to build up again. We're going to begin to feel you know, for a while we'll feel very justified, and then we'll begin to feel very guilty again and need to have someone attack us. I mean, we don't realize that we want people to attack us. That's what relieves the guilt. So it would be nice to say that we could just try to see people innocent, but really we can't do that by ourselves. I mean, the Course is saying until we are at the top of the ladder, the Course uses that lovely analogy, Ken used it all the time from the Song of Prayer, that, you know, where all of the guilt in our mind is undone and we enter what the Course calls the real world and see only innocence, because we then become aligned completely and you know, unwaveringly with Jesus's vision. Until we're in that state and all these, you know, all of this unconscious guilt has been undone through this practice of forgiveness, we can't see people innocent by ourselves. So that's why the process is always about, you know, aligning with this, making the purpose of our days a classroom in which we're learning from a new inner teacher. And so what gets us back to perceiving our innocence is really first perceiving our guilt, first calling, you know, when we feel unfairly treated by someone else, when we're reacting to that political, you know, whatever news program you're watching, that whatever hate news program you're watching, and there's lots of them on both sides.
Yes.
And, you know, that so we whatever side we're on, we're going to react to that. And, you know, it doesn't matter. I mean, that's an example. It can be anything in our lives that makes us reactive. When I find myself doing that, that's my invitation to be still an instant and go home and to say, you know what? This is a part of me that wants to feel unfairly treated. I set it up this way. Again, you know, to see the problem as it is and not the way I set it up. And so I can't do that by myself. That's where I have to, you know, my only job is to say, I think I'm wrong. I must be wrong again. I must have become afraid of love again. And I need help to see peace again. I want to see innocence. Help me to see it with you. Because right now, I think the problem is the way this politician is talking or the way this newscaster is talking. And so that when we are willing to just, you know, the process of forgiveness, the Course, is to be vigilant for our misperceptions, for catching our misperceptions. And that's what brings us, that's what's going to undo this hidden guilt and bring us back to our innocence. When we truly, you know, open to that ego-free presence in our mind and return to that, we just automatically see the other person as innocent because we see them as the same as us. All of a sudden, we're not on different sides. We see that the same frightened child in me is activated in this person, and frightened children deserve love. They don't deserve attacks. And so that compassion begins to build, and you know, that's the process that will get us to the top of the ladder in which we only see that innocence. But we kind of, it's an indirect method. We can't really go directly to God, the Course says. And so it's really just that going, you know, recognizing how we don't want to be, you know, we want people to be guilty, and we don't want to see innocence. And recognizing how resistant, you know, recognizing that I've raised my spear again, or I'm about to. I mean, even better if we can catch ourselves when we're about to, before we've, you know, let it rip on somebody, right?
Right. But it weighs a lot. It's so heavy.
It's very heavy.
I get tired of carrying it.
It's very tiring. And, you know, there was another thing that I wanted to say to you, because Ken used to talk about in some of his workshops and CDs, a grab bag. I don't know if you've listened to any of those.
I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, he had this sort of metaphor of, we all have a grab bag of, it's basically our guilt, you know, our guilty issues. And we when we become afraid again, we become afraid of love, that guilt within us builds up, and we reach into our grab bag for something that really triggers us in our lives. And everybody's is different, you know. I mean, we have, my hierarchy of illusions is different than yours. But the content is the same. It's going to scare me. It's going to activate me. It's going to make me feel justified and feel victimized, justified in attacking, whatever, you know, justified in reaching for that sword. And so, you know, in fact, I was, I'm going to read you something from something I was just writing, okay, if that's okay, because it was very,
oh, that
it was
would
just
be great.
About this. And it was in a conversation with my imaginary Jesus, but you know, where I, so I'm saying to him, I'm in dialogue with my right mind, I get it, I do, I understand what the Course is saying about the secret sins and hidden hates We hold close to anchor us here in this dream of exile from our real source and self, the heavy bag of guilty treasures we each drag around in a covert effort to prove our refugee status, largely unaware of their contents until we spend some quality time with you and experience an altered perception in which we are endlessly loved and loving. And then basically you're freed from what Ken Wapnick called the tyranny of needs, no longer dependent on anyone or anything to fill us or fail us. Well, what happens is once when we go back to that love and innocence in our mind, we become very afraid. And we go running back into the dream and reaching back into our grab bag, and we grab something else out that's going to scare us, that's going to upset us. And, you know, that, so it's like this, until all that guilt in the mind is undone for us through this process, we have to concentrate on one issue at a time and recognize on some level that, you know, I'm doing this to myself. I dipped back into my grab bag because I became afraid of love again.
Mm-hmm. And does that make any sense? It absolutely does. And what you said, though, is hitting home, because this I go back to all the time, and that is resign as your teacher because yes. You've been badly taught. And See, I so badly want to think I can teach myself. That's right. One of the hardest things. You know, I don't want to.
That's when the ego joins the journey and says, I can just muscle my way through this. I'm just going to see you innocent. I'm just going to be
right.
Loving.
I can figure this out. I can do it. I can figure this out. I can do it. And It's like, no, you can't do it by yourself. This is unconscious. And see, I don't want to believe things are unconscious either. I want to believe that we can, like you say, muscle through and bring them into the consciousness. Right. Why can't we do that, Susan?
Well, we all do. We all want to think that because, again, that's our autonomy, right? That makes me real. That keeps me this separated self real and in control of this process, you know, and we don't realize that what we're doing is saying, you know what, Jesus, I think I get this course now, you know, I'm going to take it from here.
Exactly.
You know, and that's, how's that working out for us?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I know. Shoot fire, you know? Oh,
but the trick is to just be aware, you know, aware of how I'm feeling and try to be honest about it. And, you know, again, if I'm feeling anything but loving toward everyone and everything, including myself, then, you know, I got work to do. That's all.
Right.
Yeah. And it's not of me. And mainly the work is that I need to be taught. I'm in school. You know, I don't know. Be willing to be proven wrong. Again and again.
Again and again and again. Right.
Exactly. It's a
which
process.
We just so badly do not want to do.
We can't skip steps. This is not, it took us, you know, how many gazillion years in the dream to overlearn this ego thought system and have this, you know, this knee-jerk reaction all the time. And so it's going to take us time to unlearn this. This is contrary to every other teaching in the world. It is a completely radical teaching.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. And, you know, I want to bring people's attention, too, to another lesson, because this is one of the lessons that you'll do this week if you started on January 1st. And this is also one of those lessons I quote from quite a bit. It's lesson 161, and it's, give me your blessing, Holy Son of God. Mm. And that one always kind of makes me laugh because sometimes I use it as a curse, you know? I mean, it's almost like, yeah, you know, this person's pissing me off or making me mad. So I kind of go back and I go, give me your blessing, Holy Son of God, you know?
Holy Son of God, that wasn't exactly what was going to follow holy, right?
No, and that's not exactly what they're talking about there.
No, it's not.
When I read that lesson, I mean, that's it. I just laughed and I thought, oh my God, this is such a perfect lesson. Give me your blessing, Holy Son of God. But once again, just that reminder, you know, this person, I mean, you know, it always seemed kind of quirky, I guess I'd say it that way. That's not quite the right word, but you know, this is the idea. You don't go to heaven alone.
No.
You know,
no.
Give me your blessing, Holy Son of God, because it's through my relationship with you that I am going to learn forgiveness, that I'm going to learn innocence. And so I can't do this. See, I want to do it on my own, Susan. So here comes this lesson that says, no, you're not doing it on your own. And, you know, that should be the way you greet your brothers and your sisters is, give me your blessing, Holy Son of God.
And it's really us giving our blessing to them, holding them innocent, that is going to that's how we receive their blessing. And, you know, that whole idea of we go home together or not at all. I was just thinking in lesson 182, he says that really. I'm trying to think where it is. If you'll just give me a second. Well, it's really, I mean, just that whole idea of he holds the might of heaven in his hand and calls them friend and gives his strength to them, that they may see he would be friend to them. He asks that they protect him, for his home is far away and he will not return to it alone. And, you know, so this is that child that Jesus within, you know, that innocence within. We can't go, how do we get to that innocence? We ask to align with that loving presence, but then the result of that is that we must see the other person as the same as we are, as just as is included in that innocence. And so, you know, this isn't I often catch myself wanting to, you know, kind of ride off into the sunset with Jesus by myself. You know, enough with these cases.
Exactly.
You and me, we're going home, you know, and well,
let's make it a date, Susan. Right. Susan, we have less than 4 minutes to close the show today. Right. I'm so glad that we're ending the show on laughter. It is just so funny. And once again, I just so appreciate you as a teacher, and I thank you. And I want to recommend to everybody that you can find Susan at her website, which is www.4asinforgiveness. So that's FORAYS, 4asinforgiveness.com. And also, if you live in the Denver area, she does teaches a discussion group every Tuesday night from 7 to 8:45, and that is at the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center. So if you want to just drop in, and we're working through the textbook right now. So that's a really great class, and thank you for doing that, Susan. And do you want to take 1 minute to announce anything else that might be going on for you?
You know, that's really about it. We've just started chapter one in A Journey Through the Text, which is where we're doing selected readings, where you know, my teaching is very grounded in Ken Wapnick's work, who was you know, a beloved teacher and mentor of mine and many of us. And it's a great opportunity to really delve deeply into the text, and you know, I will also be bringing in related lessons and other materials, you know, anything that's complementary that I think that comes up for me, you know, from the manual or the psychotherapy or Song of Prayer pamphlets. And so it's not just a, you know, reading through the text line by line. It's really more of a thematic kind of class.
Study, yes. And it's good. I've been to several of the classes, and I plan to keep attending whenever I can. So thank you for that, Susan. And thanks for being here today. And also, I'd say thanks to the listeners and to everybody in the chat room, and to producer Scott Weaver, and to Mark Husson, who is the father of Everything 1-2. And I would also draw your attention to today we are doing a special sale, because Mercury, that illusionary planet of thinking and communication, is going to go retrograde starting tomorrow. So we're doing a special sale on 1-2-listen.com today. So check that out. I will be there part of the day. And if I'm not there today and we don't connect, there's a lot of other times that we connect. So look for me on 1-2-listen.com. And I want you to stick around today, because we've got some great programming coming up in just 5 minutes. It will be The Through Line with Christine Dumouriez. So please stay tuned. Fabulous Friday here on 1-2 Radio. And as we close the show today, we'll listen to Homeward Bound. I think that might be appropriate. And there's multiple songs with that name, but this particular one is the one that was written by Paul Simon. But this version is performed by the Glee cast. So enjoy the song. We're waiting for Christine to come on the air. And until next week, relax and wear loose clothes. You've been listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way you think about life and spirituality.
Station, got a ticket for my destination. Oh,
on a tour of
one night stands, my suitcase and guitar in hand. And every stop is neatly planned for a poet and a one-man band. This way, this stringing us along, along. Just know you're not alone, 'cause I'm gonna make place your home.
Every day's an endless stream of cigarettes and magazines. Oh, and each town looks the same to me. The movies and the factories and every street.
Your home.